Missing by James Patterson and Bill Clinton. Yes, that Bill Clinton. Is he a writer, you ask? No, I answer. No, he is not. But hey, if you've not listened to part one, highly recommend you, you know, scroll back just a teensy bit on your feed and do that. If you have listened to part one, what am I rambling for? You know, let's hop into the episode. So yeah, without further ado, let's figure out where the president went, y'all. Let's do it.
Okay, so we're almost halfway through the book, and they go take...
Sorry, yes. Turn into the Joker for a second.
Yes, I hope y'all are buckled in, people, because... Oh, God. So they go take Marine One to visit what's basically Peter Thiel's compound in West Virginia.
It's wild. It's just like, yeah, it's my venture capitalist friend. It's really cool that I hang out with him.
My billionaire buddy that, they just casually copped to the CIA helping some venture capitalists build a safe house. You know,
see, I like low-key was thinking of Epstein just because it's Clinton, but you know,
Yes, you know.
But, you know, whichever, pick your poison.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's whoever. It's Epstein, it's Musk, it's TL, it's, you know, again, choose your demon. They have the most evil Zoom call of all time with the White House Chief of Staff, the FBI Director, and the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. And then who gets flown in but the Prime Minister of Israel herself? Noya. And oh boy, if you thought it was infuriating before, here's an excerpt from their meeting. Noya and I have had disagreements over the two-state solution and settlements on the West Bank. But when it comes to the things that bring us together today, there is no daylight between our positions. A safe and stable United States means a safe and stable Israel. They have every reason to help us and no reason not to. Because to the liberal president, that's what nakedly genocidal and racist policy toward Palestinians amounts to. A disagreement. A difference of opinion. And again, you know, this is what agreeing to disagree on politics frequently represents. This is the stance of somebody who's never once been threatened by political action because, you know, Israel's policies towards Palestinians, right, of attacking them while they pray, of bulldozing their homes, their water treatment facilities, of shooting dead their children and journalists in the streets. You know, this is the material outcome of this opinion that the president has a difference with. And a mere difference amounts to nothing. You know, especially when you consider that the United States bankrolls this ongoing genocide to the tune of $4 billion a year.
And there's no daylight, you know, between their end goal, their moral values. So
they come right out and say, you know, that it's critical to U.S. security interests in the region that they continue to bankroll this. You know, it's they talk briefly about again, they go back to Russia. They bring up some Soviet pipeline sabotage that we admitted to doing, you know, in the 80s, right? And we make fun of socialist countries for paranoia and insularity, right? You know, is it any wonder they'd be trying to spy on us?
Mm.
And then the German chancellor comes.
Yeah, right? You know. Just
so we have the Israeli prime minister, we have the German chancellor. For a certain type of person, this is like the Avengers.
Yep, this is the second. This is our second episode in a row where we get to have an Avengers comparison. We have the Vonniverse, and now we have the, It's not as good as the Vonniverse, but the Patterverse. I don't know, but it's just like these dudes rolling up. Yeah, you're gonna have. I'm imagining like not left wing, but liberal Twitter celebrities. They're gonna be there. Jeff Tiedrick is there. It's awesome.
Everyone's also
having a great time.
This is also where they mention the
Bill Clinton, and
the explosion in LA that took out the defense mm-hmm. contractor's factory, as it happens, was not intended to take that out. It was intended for the next door water treatment plants. And can we just marinate in the irony that that the president ensures with the utmost vigilance and conscientiousness that no citizens get tainted water?
No, they would never, you know.
Yeah, you know, just ask the citizens of Flint or Jackson or any other city with water dirtier than theirs.
Yeah, I mean, it's I honestly, like, I was there was like this glimmer of not hope, but like, I was like, oh my goodness, there's going to be something interesting, right? When they couldn't figure out why there was an attack on a defense contractor, right? Mm-hmm. For a second, I was like, they're going to have a moment where they don't realize why someone hates them and they're going to figure out why someone hates them. It's going to be trite. It's going to be the Air Force One bad guy, but it's still going to be something. Nope. They couldn't even give me that. They couldn't even give me that. It had to be whatever this plan was. I don't care. Go ahead. Yeah. I was so ready to have like a moment of at least false. No, nothing.
Hollow. This is a really weird minor detail that stood out to me, but the German chancellor, Chancellor Richter. Yeah.
Sorry, Castlevania.
It is truly like, I mean, it's not Left Behind tier naming, you know, it's not Heim Rosenzweig tier, but you know, it flirts with that.
Yeah.
So he's from Germany's Christian Democratic Union, which is Angela Merkel's, a political party. She was the chancellor at this time. That's the only political party named in this book.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
I guess so. Yeah.
I don't know why. So
I guess because there's the multiple parties and they just want to specify, or they just want to like really clarify who they're dealing with here. But that it's a very weird decision to make. I hadn't thought about that. You make a good point.
Yeah. And it is Chancellor Richter who delivers my favorite line in the book, you know, where we finally lay out, you know, exactly what this Dark Ages thing will accomplish. Again, you know, it's going to go through the internet. It's going to tank everything that's connected to the internet, you know, from your supercomputers down to your smart fridges, and just all the data is gone. Right. What you're telling us, says Chancellor Richter, his voice shaky, is that you're going to steal the internet from America.
Yep.
I had a good laugh at that. It is highlighted here in pink. It will be burned into my memory. Just seared.
Steal the internet from America.
God. No words, no notes. I couldn't come up with a line like that if I tried, and I have tried.
You know, it's so good that, like, you know, I was like trying to think of a good Castlevania bit to do, but like it's just the thing it's in there is already so insane that I like me saying, oh, when he said the dirty pile of man is a dirty pile of cigarettes, it's not even as good as like, what is he talking? You're going to steal the internet from America. Hey, I mean, like, you know, Bill Clinton's vice president invented the internet. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mr. Gore. Yes, we have him to thank for Goetze.
Worth noting, Bill Clinton under his administration, that was the first White House website, whitehouse.gov, was launched under Bill Clinton. So, you know.
Oh yes. Whitehouse.gov, not whitehouse.com, by the way. You know, there's a distinction between the two that I invite y'all to check out.
I don't invite y'all to check out. That's actually the difference between us. That's our ideological, you're seeing an ideological split in the pod over whether or not you should check out whitehouse.com. But I will say that, yeah, the whitehouse.org, apparently its original launch, I don't know much about this because I just read it today. Apparently its original launch was disastrous, but so few people like were checking it out, it didn't really matter. Mm. But I will have to investigate further because I want to know what is it disastrous? I don't know. We'll see.
Yes.
But anyway, let's, what happens next?
Well, we have
the Russian next, right?
Yes, we have our third guest, which is the Russian delegation, you know, led by their, I believe it's the prime minister that's visiting.
Yes.
And he, you get a real stare down moment, right? Between what is the Russian president's name? Chernikov?
I think, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, he's not former KGB like Putin is, right? He's his father was KGB.
Mm-hmm.
And Chernikov is like this shadowy figure. We never see him. We only see his proxy, the prime minister, right? you know, and he's described by Duncan as, oh, he's the military leader behind suspected war crimes in Chechnya and Crimea and later Ukraine, from the rape and murder of innocent civilians to the merciless torture of prisoners of war and the suspected use of chemical weapons. You know, says a military leader behind suspected war crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan, and later Syria, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like it's every accusation that America makes is a confession.
Imagine intervening in Ukraine.
Oh yeah,
that would be a really terrible thing to do.
Yeah, you know, he refers even to the seizure of Crimea in 2014 without any mention of the proximate
the coup.
Cause thereof.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And here's where the first
or, I mean, or worth noting, I'm sorry, in 2018, ongoing civil war in Ukraine that we were just dumping fuel on the fire of.
Oh yeah. You know, which I mean, Congress voted twice, you know, to stop funding Nazis, mm-hmm. and you know, then just, you know, it was quietly restarted again.
You know how it goes.
Yeah, so it goes. And here's where, you know, to the extent that America was ever the underdog in the first place in this story, that even that flimsy narrative starts to crack, because it turns out America, we caught, you know, As we've gone over, you know, we caught Dark Ages, right? Mm-hmm. We know something's going on. So America has invented a backup internet specifically for the military.
Yeah.
And made its overseas operations totally autonomous. You know, not perfect, but, you know, we can still strike wherever and whenever we please, defensively. Of course. How fucking terrifying is that?
Yeah.
Right. How fucking terrifying is the global hegemon being able to act autonomously, you know, in its particular areas of command, even if you take out the nerve center, right?
Yeah, like that doesn't assure me of anything. That just sounds like it's like, yeah, we've kind of set up the conditions to create like warlords anyway. And by our own admission, it's going to be anarchy over here, but we're going to like make sure we have the capacity to have like highly technological nodes of war that we're just going to put these like petty political appointments over that mm-hmm. in this very novel we've exposed that we can't trust any of and that can and will betray us and have made decisions that have led to this place. Anyway, have fun, you know.
Yeah, you know, and
again, within the world of the novel, the logic doesn't even hold up.
Mm.
Much less with actual history.
It's very vexing to me that, you know, the leader of the apartheid state, the Israeli prime minister, is the one who gets the closest to any kind of nuance on the Russia situation, right?
Yeah.
Because she says a couple of times, you know, the expansion of NATO to the Russian borders has been the cause of great consternation in the Kremlin. You know, mm-hmm. doesn't delve in to why at all, but you know, she flies so close to the sun here, you know.
Well, she still feels bad over the fire and brimstone incident.
Oh well, yes, that is, you know, you don't come out of Gog and Magog invading you, right, without a little bit of introspection.
You're like, you know, I feel kind of bad. Those guys, they really had us dead to rights, and then God intervened, put his finger mm-hmm. on the scale.
Yes.
In this world, in this book, God is the United States, by the way, just worth noting.
Unironically. This,
yeah, like actually, that's how it acts. But what happens next plot-wise? I know we've got more like intrigue.
Yeah, Russia is, as it happens, on America's side, because, you know, Russia knows how destabilizing it would be for the world if America was brought down. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Bach is on a boat, and she's it's a lakeside fucking thing that the president has holed up at, and so Bach is trying to infiltrate to take out Augie, because he's the last one with any knowledge of Dark Ages and how to possibly stop it. She fights a pack of coyotes at one point, which it sounds cooler than it actually is.
We
find out that she's part of this Yugoslavian or Serbian flavor of South Slavic paramilitary called the Ratnici, the warriors. Augie escapes through a window at one point when he takes a smoke break. There's a lapse in security there. He's almost detected, but the Russian guards prevent Augie from escaping. And you know, they they prevent him from escaping. You know, they give him a, they scare him with a couple of warning shots, and they get an earful from the president for that. For, I mean, they were, you know, there's no such thing as a warning shot, but you know, they, it's weird to me that that doesn't even endear them to the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we figure out that, okay, Nina built the virus. Nina was the brains of this operation. She realized the extent to which it would be used, and she had a change of heart. She came to stop it. She came to offer the president a way out, right? In exchange for getting the U.S. government to get the Georgian government to grant her amnesty, because she's on the run from there. Nina didn't tell Augie about who the contact was, but they're cracking her phone right now. The American intelligence community is cracking her phone. So we're about to figure out who exactly leaked Dark Ages to her. And all eyes right now are on the VP.
Yeah, because she's got every reason to, like, you know, be anti the president. You know, yes. She should rightfully be president. She's got that resentment. And now there's like this brewing storm with Congress, you know, because like the president's, you know, already was close to getting his goose cooked. And now it's
Getting pretty sure. Brandt has actually met with Rhodes earlier to work out some kind of impeachment deal. And as it turns out, the president knows about that as well. That's the thing. Like, all the tension that Patterson spends the first half of the book building up, he then systematically dismantles it and diffuses it by revealing that, the president knew about this all along. The president had this contingency plan in place all along, you know, so there was never any real, he was never really backed into a corner to begin with, right?
Well, if it ever got too close to the edge, then they'll, like, what we were saying, the god of this world, which is the United States, would be somehow flawed, right? And any failure is somehow like a failure of the U.S. And the only real failings of the U.S. by the end of the book are just places where we have like failed to, we have failed it, you know, like the contingency plans exist. The desire exists. The will exists. The real issues with the U.S. are just like, because we failed it. We failed to give it the proper funding. We failed to pay the proper loyalty. We failed to have the proper amount of patriotism. Like, that is where that, if there was ever like a, they took advantage of a systemic flaw in the United States, then it would have to acknowledge a systemic flaw. And then you'd have the travesty of, like, you know, this book actually having a moment of being interesting.
Yeah.
And you can't have that.
And again, you know, the inherent problem with having the president be your protagonist, right? He's somebody who can have the FBI tail everybody, right?
Yeah, exactly. Especially this president, too. Like, the perfect guy.
At this time, Chindorik is finally getting raided. By the way, we haven't brought him up again, but Solomon Chindorik has been, he and his people have been in an apartment in Germany this whole time partying it up with prostitutes. Prostitution's legal in Germany, by the way.
Yeah, he was just chilling with them, and he was like staring out at the skyscrapers, you know, doing villain things, you know.
Yes, and he finally gets raided by the German special forces, but. Plot twist, there's five people that they've detected in the apartment, and they think one of them is Chindorik. No, the fifth person, as it turns out, is a sex worker. Notably, the only character who's explicitly described to be Asian, so, you know, a little bit of stereotyping there. Chindorik isn't there. He's in a cafe. He's escaped, right? And at this time, they've got the whole resources of the Pentagon's anti-cyber terrorism team, working trying to reconstruct Dark Ages, trying to figure out exactly how it ticks, right? And in chapter 78, especially, there's a really funny statistic where they've bricked 300 computers trying to do so, and they're getting another 500, you know. So presumably there's a magic number of computers, right, that will finally defeat this
thing. They're just like there's like some Looney Tunes contraption just crushing these things.
Yes, you know, every time
they fail.
Yeah, every time they try and crack the virus, it activates and it overwrites all their active data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, active data is doing a lot of heavy lifting for reasons that we'll find out shortly. But chapter 85, right? Every avenue that they've tried has been defeated. And the president's at his lowest moment, right? He doesn't see any way out of this. And he gets a pep talk from his best friend, Danny Akers, who served with him in Iraq, who went to law school with him, you know, who was always there when they were fishing for whatever you fish for in North Carolina, right? And that's what gets the president. That's what spurs him to go back into the Situation Room and try and figure out exactly what's up.
And go back to situationing. Yeah, you just sometimes you need that. That and you're like double dosage of steroids to like keep you alive. Do we have any thoughts on the friend character, or is it just like he exists? I know he partially exists again as like a sort of another attempt to humanize the president. You have like this part where he talks about when we were on the bus, you volunteered for a more dangerous mission, so I didn't like have to go on it. Talking about the president, so like once again making the president into like a superhero.
He's a regular guy, you know, and he almost feels like an audience surrogate, you know, to the American president crowd, you know, where you know, the president is this down to earth, accessible person who, you know, if only he could speak to the right person, you know, if only you could have a really long, heartfelt conversation, perhaps even a romance with him. You know, he could see the light and get done what needs to get done. Right. You know, that's who Danny Akers is. That's his narrative purpose. Right.
Yeah. The thing is, it's just, you know, it's so like, I might have to, I'm never mind. Come back to me. I don't think this thought is fully cooked.
Yes. So
more like Danny Fakers. How's that? I don't have anything else.
No notes. No notes. Couldn't have said it better myself. So the president, through this, through a conversation that he has with Akers, through some memory that he dredges out of his past, he gets an idea. He's like, okay, the virus deletes everything that's active. So why don't we run the virus on a computer where everything's been marked as deleted and is inactive? Mm-hmm. And so basically put everything in the recycling bin and then the virus just won't see it, right? The first clever thing in this book that made me chuckle, the first and only thing really, is in chapter 92, right? When somebody asks, well, what about the core like operating system files, like system 32, like, you know, how do we square deleting that and then restoring it? Because that question is asked and then the response is basically shut up, right?
Yeah, shut up.
Which, you know, you have to have that energy sometimes when you're crafting a techno thriller or a fantasy, right? You have to know what to explain and what not to explain. And here is the one time it gets that right, right?
Yeah, just that's absolutely right. Like, you can have, unless you really want to be obsessive with it and be like, you have to be a really good writer to like make a tech, like some kind of techno thriller that like is completely correct or completely internally consistent. Like, it just needs to work, you know? And this book like could learn from that lesson, that own lesson, like a lot of more times. If it really, they could repeat that a lot more times and just make a little less sense. Like plot wise and like have a little more fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very fun. It's not.
No. So it works in theory, right? It works in theory. The president's idea, like the virus executes, right? Dark Ages executes on the control group of computers and doesn't see anything and then goes dormant again. Cool, right? Meanwhile, the president has offered a pardon, a full pardon to anybody in his national security team who knows about Dark Ages and who might have leaked it. Nobody's taken it, and now the phone has been decrypted. And here's where it starts cutting between like very, very short chapters, like a couple paragraphs long chapters in one case, in multiple cases, really. it's cuts back and forth. It's just so clipped, right? It's so choppy between the Rotnichi sending dudes in to try and finish off Augie for good. There's a team in an SUV. There's a team in a boat, both of which get blown up immediately. Boom. Because, again, this is who you're supposed to be rooting for, the people with Viper helicopters, mm-hmm. right?
Just yeah, it's like just thematically, like narratively, it is more interesting to be like on the side of the dudes who are trying to infiltrate the facility a lot more powerful than them. The mm-hmm. fact that it's like 10 guys, not even up against the entire US military, like it's almost comical. In fact, it could be comical. You show these scenes with the right music and it's funny. Like it doesn't, the threat's not really that credible.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one person who gets in and who actually does pose a credible threat, we think, is Bach, mm-hmm. who gets into the safe house only to find, oh, there's another contingency. They're doing all this stuff remotely.
Yep.
And
got him.
Speaking of remotes, within the Pentagon, oh no, it seems somebody has triggered the virus after all. And there's a 30-minute suspend now for a password to stop this virus.
Yep.
Which is a backdoor that Nina has put in, you know, as part of her change of heart. And literally now, there's a period of three chapters or so where
they're just like guessing, right?
Yeah, the fate of the nation comes down to a Zoom call. That's a meeting of the president, vice president, the heads of the military, and the intelligence agencies. This is who you're rooting for.
Yeah,
literally,
the great heroes.
Yes, and literally, a lucky guess by Carolyn Brock saves them all. It's the name of Nina's hometown in Georgia.
Or is it?
Yes. Because as it happens, guess what? The countdown was also a ruse. We have another contingency. It was
because he already got it from the original text, right?
Yeah, the virus is already defeated. The original text that they cracked from Nina's phone have solved the mystery. It was a ruse to bait somebody into giving him the answer, and mm-hmm. that person was not the vice president.
She the last person you'd expect.
Carolyn Brock.
Yep. It's wild because I knew it was gonna be her. Like it's because it's like a fake, like, oh, it could never be her. She's the one person it could it was doing a little too much there. Though it is funny that she feels like a Hillary stand-in and she's the bad guy. I do like that.
Yes,
a little marital issues there. Probably the only marital issue the Clintons have ever had. I won't look it up. Oh, yeah. She was basically just like being too much of a striver, and she wanted to become the new vice president. Is that right?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, she has a unintentional laugh line, you know, that that, you know, I got caught saying something that a man could get away with, you know, like, yeah. It's like, okay, like you were denied the ability to carry around the nuclear football and unilaterally order the nuclear destruction of the entire world. Congratulations. You know, mm-hmm. like it's the cynical sort of, you know, there are people who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she is a woman. I don't deny that. But, you know, to pretend that she faces the same sort of challenges that a working class woman in this country does, like that's supposed to be relatable at all, is just the most laughable, cynical thing in the world. Right. And yet that's her like driving motivation for wanting to live vicariously through the president and, you know, ultimately stage this enormous coup that she gets to save the day with, right?
It's like it all comes back to just like individuals being individuals, and there's no at the end of the day, yeah, there were these terrorist groups, yeah, there were these foreign actors, but it all comes down to like people sitting in rooms wanting it more. Who mm-hmm. wants it more? It all comes back to politics. It all comes in politics in a very narrow West, I mean, we already said it, but like West Wingy type of way, just like people wanting power. There is no materiality. There is no anything. It comes back to these, just like these people sitting in rooms saying and doing things. And there is no grander narrative. The grander narrative follows at their whims, the whims of these big players who just like happen to be swept up into these positions for no particular reason. Or if there is a reason, it's because they're the best and the brightest and the smartest and the goodest and the coolest. It is pure distilled liberalism. I don't know. Like pure distilled lib brain. I sound like a broken record, but it's not interesting. It's like, okay, cool. Like, honestly, like the how hard they were leaning into it being the vice president, it would have been more of a twist for it to have just been the vice president.
Right.
I feel like, because it was so obviously not, if you've like, you know, seen like even like a child mystery, like a 30 minute, like animated mystery short for children, you know that it's not like the first one they go with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and like, I get it. There's format. Patterson knows format. He's written a million of these things. And this is the million and one, and he's got his paycheck, and so it goes. But like, man, it is just really, just when it's like wrapped, when it's a story like that, like a very lazy, like this very lazy, wrapped in a bow kind of story with these kind of politics in this kind of situation, it just feels so noxious. It's unbelievable.
Oh yes. Yes. And then it just, and it's,
and also I had to read it. And that's also like, I'm mad about that too.
Yes. Yes.
Which is my fault. I suggested this book, but
no. You know, I mean, it certainly won't be the last book that provokes this sort of reaction in us.
Yes. Maybe though it's hard for me to imagine. I should probably cross my fingers, but it's hard for me to imagine ever getting to this level of mad about a book again. But
we'll see. It's hard for me to imagine another book being as smug as this book ends being.
Right. Yeah. At least Left Behind was camp. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but this, like, I mean, chapter 125, right? We're getting toward the end here, oh. Right? You know, I mean, you know, the mystery is solved, the day is saved, the virus is over, and oh man, turns out the president knew something else the whole time as well.
Uh-huh.
Which is that the Russians knew about all this, you know, weren't directly responsible, but were intermediaries, as it happens, for the men behind the men, right? This splinter group, as it happens, of Saudi royals that was funding the sons of jihad with the Russians as go-betweens, right? And again, Chernikov, the Russian president, is explicitly stated as wanting to reconstruct the Soviet Empire, which is the most screamingly ignorant thing perhaps in this book.
Mm-hmm.
The modern-day Russian Federation, as we know, is a capitalist country, in no way resembles the Soviet Union. But, you know, it's that continuity that this book is pretending is part and parcel of the American ruling class transmuting the anti-communism of the Cold War into some other thought-terminating manufacturer of consent. You know, anti-terrorism, xenophobia, anti-Russian racism, you know, again, conjuring this determined enemy to point people at rather than your own government.
Yeah, honestly, if only there had been a reasonable, rational president in the White House to oversee the transition of the Soviet Union to Russia, just if only we'd had someone cool and good, like, wait, you're telling me that was Bill Clinton. Okay. Like, on. Like, it was like any issues you have with Russia, like, you know, it's a dead meme at this point, but like, you made the sandwich.
Yes.
No. You say you hate Subway, you made the sandwich. Like, yes. This is you. You built this world order. Like, this is all your idea. Top to bottom. Like,
and literally the applause line here in the chapter is where the president closes the Russian embassy and cuts diplomatic ties and sanctions them. By the way, you know, sanctions don't just mean that rich foreigners can't buy yachts. You know, it means that the country so targeted can't buy food, can't buy medicine. You know, you don't have to look very far to see UN reports of American sanctions killing hundreds of thousands in places like Venezuela through starvation, through preventable illness.
Under the Clinton presidency, Iraq, by their own admission, hundreds of thousands of people died of sanctions on Iraq. But you should read the applause line because it's pretty badass.
Oh yes, and by the way, stay out of our elections.
God. While many of you are likely yelling "Go Patriots" or "Go Rams," I'm yelling "Go Robert Mueller and the rule of law." Hashtag Super Bowl 2019 Atlanta. God. My favorite tweet of all time from Brian Krasenstein.
Yes.
And like, again, it's that energy, and it comes out at this time. So like, what are we to expect? But like, seriously, come on.
Again, in this timeline, Trump didn't win. Jonathan Lincoln Duncan did. And
I like the idea that it actually Jonathan Duncan was there was a real Russian interference in the election, and Jonathan Duncan was their like proxy.
Oh, pretty God. Funny.
It reveals God, that at the end, and he like smiles at the camera and says, "Activate Dark Ages." I'd forgive it everything.
That would redeem the book of all his sins.
I would forgive it everything, but no. Stay out of our elections.
Yeah, I mean,
because they've already found their emperor.
Russia bought ads. That's it. They didn't work. Russia's government was preparing strategies for diplomatic relations with a Clinton administration on the eve of election night 2016. If you want to talk about election meddling, again, talk about the United States helping Boris Yeltsin to the presidency of Russia from 6% approval. Talk about Hillary Clinton being an objectively shitty candidate. Talk about 9 million Obama voters from 2012 not showing up to the polls in 2016 because she was a terrible candidate. Half of them stayed home. Half of them voted for Trump because he ran as a change agent, however disingenuously. You know, like the idea that our bourgeois democratic institutions are threatened by devious foreigners, you know, it's a thought-terminating scam. It's intended to shut down any kind of discussion on the contradictions that exist within these institutions. But
Go ahead.
But then we come to chapter 128.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's the thesis, there's the antithesis, and now they have the synthesis.
Which is the address to Congress.
Yeah, everybody's favorite.
Yes. It really ties this whole package together with a glorious, glorious bow, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's funny. The New York Times actually wrote a glowing review of this book in their opinion section, and they even said that this ending was weak.
Yes.
And they claim this book is good, to be clear, which is insane. But like, even they're like, yeah, the end got a little preachy there.
Yes, and the president lays out the evil plan of the renegade Saudis. Mm-hmm. Overthrow the king of Saudi Arabia. Expropriate the wealth of his branch of the royal family and its supporters, reconcile with Iran and with Syria, establish a modern technocratic caliphate using science and technology to raise the standing of the Muslim world to heights not seen in 1,000 years.
Yeah, okay. Really bad.
Take out the caliphate part, because, you know, Saudi Arabia is already a reactionary theocracy. Everything you've just heard is objectively a good thing, right? Peace in the Middle East, expropriation of the royal family's wealth. Right. It's a massive self-report here that America's standing in the world depends upon the neocolonial exploitation of Southwest Asia.
It literally says they're planning to make peace with Iran and Syria. It's like, good? Question mark? Like, what are you talking about? Like, it's doing the 1,000 years thing is like so clearly like the return of like for all this book tries to do the backtracking with no, he's actually a secular terrorist. They had to get their punch in at the end there. They had to do their due. I was going to say due diligence, whatever they see it. They had to do their racism.
Yeah.
Just man, come on. Like, but don't worry. Now we've got MBS, the good guy, and everything was always going to be good. And when we have war with Iran, we know the Saudis will be on our side, and that's a good thing.
Yes. You know, just ignore their public execution of apostates and, you know, right, the repression of women. You know, like it's
well, that's an unfortunate side effect of building democracy. God. So, it's crazy. This whole speech, like, and the part where it literally says, my approval rating went from 30% to 80% after that. It's just so...
Fuck off.
Like, come on. You could not... If the president cured cancer in this day and age, they wouldn't get 80% approval rating. Mm-hmm. And from one of the two parties. It's impossible. It's so silly. Like, also, like, if this happened, like, if this actually happened, everything in this, like, the president's approval, like, this, can you imagine, like, what the QAnon dudes would do with this? I can't. I can't even imagine the QAnon dudes, like, the conspiracies they would spin out of the president being missing. Oh, my God. Man. That would rule. It would be terrible. But, like, and he does, but, yeah, he does this whole, like, lecture, Russia, you know, oh, yeah, Suleiman, religious or not, has gone to meet his maker. Okay, good one.
Oh, yeah, there's a bit where he gets where he just gets pumped full of bullets, and then that's the end of it.
Bada bang, bada boom. He's gone. Yeah, Saturday, none of this was certain. Yeah, and he does this whole, like, he summarizes the plot. He even says, that is why your president went missing. A lot has happened in a couple days. Then he, like, criticizes the press for being too partisan. And then he says, and then he, like, talks, like, the partisan Congress leaders. He's like, we should have been working together on this, but instead we were separate. You know, he doesn't call out the Speaker of the House for, like, the Speaker of the House, like, trying to supplant him secretly. Like, he calls him out, but he doesn't, like, mention that the Speaker of the House was, like, trying to pull a thing to make, put his, like, child on the Supreme Court and stuff.
Oh yeah. We missed that, didn't we?
Yeah. Cause I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, no, not if you care, if you want to talk about it, you can. I just have nothing.
Not really. It's a whole lot of nothing. It ends on a very vapid and mawkish sort of appeal to reaching across the aisle and compromise. And
right, you know, and he does this whole thing like, yeah, when they go low, we go high. He goes high.
He says, you know, think of how different it would be if you reach beyond our base to represent a broader spectrum of opinions and interests. You know, yes, think of how different it would be if Hillary Clinton went to the Rust Belt, right? Think of how different it would be if working class people were represented at all in your party platform, you know? Like, and he goes,
when they go low, we go to our high horse, more like.
Aha.
That's honestly, literally, though, that's just what's happening here.
Yeah.
And then different would be if you had done anything, if you had done things materially different. Like if as, like, to follow up on what you were saying, if Bill Clinton as president hadn't done things that, like, Trump was able to make, you know, right wing reactionary, but not like solutions to, but real criticisms of things like NAFTA, real criticisms of, like, the loss of, like, you know, good union manufacturing jobs. Of course, he took it a horrible, terrible, right-wing, diluted way, and he didn't solve the problem. But, like, if you don't want the criticism, then don't create the problem. Like,
oh, yes.
Which you did. You did, and you're not taking any accountability for it. This whole book is just about a president who got impeached, and everyone was so mean to him, and if only they had listened to him give some kick-ass speech, knew how smart he was, then he would have 80% approval rating.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then he does try real Clintonism. He streamlines immigration reform, especially for
gun
people
control.
Coming here to start businesses.
Yeah, of course.
They're not sending the most entrepreneurial. Like, you know. You know, he does marketable climate change action somehow.
It doesn't really say what. I like, he was like, we have to debate how to fast. It's just, it's so, oh man.
He curbs, you know, he takes action to curb the opioid crisis, which the government literally helped create.
Yeah, he fixes it. It's good.
And of course, there's police reform. The police work with communities to act more responsibly. There's more responsible and cutting edge defense spending. You know, mm-hmm. which all the empirical evidence indicates does not make people safer. You know, it's just
you just read a whole book explaining why it does, Joss. I don't know what convincing you need.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
Clearly everything's safe. Everything's good.
Yeah. You know, because how would we have you know, I mean, as we said in our Left Behind episode. The fantasy one has to indulge in, consciously or otherwise, to be a patriotic American is that America represents the pinnacle of civilization and that it is constantly under threat by jealous primitives. You know, yeah. There exists no example within living memory of a president using his broad executive powers to broaden democratic rights to raise the quality of life for working people, except during times of significant popular uprising, upheaval, meager protections enacted in the face of COVID, which have now been completely dismantled, you know. So the thing of it is, like, the president has to be powerless to do these things, even in fiction, right? Because otherwise people might wonder why he can't use his broad executive powers for good, you know, particularly among people who say they hate him, but then show up and vote for him anyway, because the other guy is worse, right? There has to be an immediate existential crisis to continue to justify the existence of the man in the White House, you know?
Yeah, it really is wild. Like, at the end of the day, I can't exactly walk away from this like feeling like I don't know that I've learned anything. In fact, I think I've lost quite a bit of what brain capacity I once had, limited as that may be. But there is one analogy that I have to make before we move towards wrapping this up. And it's simply that, like, at the end of the day, this is every bit as howlingly, screamingly, over the top, insanely reactionary as Left Behind. Like, really, in almost every way, and that's not to like cover for Left Behind or anything like that. Well, you can listen to our episode on Left Behind, but like in every way, this specific brand of liberalism is so deeply tribal while calling for reaching across the aisle. It is so deeply violent while calling for peace. And it is so deeply confusing and deceptive while calling for more clarity. It is smug. It is over the top ridiculous. And it doesn't even get to come with like the bells and whistles of the supernatural that Left Behind comes with. Like, I made this joke that this book is like Bill Clinton is the, Bill Clinton is, Tim LaHaye's Wario and James Patterson is, Jerry B. Jenkins' Waluigi in this situation. Like, they're just the reverse. They're like the dark version of these other, like, and it's not, you know, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but just thinking of the other, just like truly horrible book that we've read, the direct connection, it just feels like important to make. And it's why, like, and it's why these people can never be the option. It's why these people can never fix things. Cause like, okay, so imagine you get a super majority, a filibuster proof majority of this guy, of the president from this book.
Oh,
awesome. God. What would happen? Nothing. Jack shit would happen. Mm-hmm. Like, in the world of this book, jack shit would happen, because they would find some loophole like they do in real life. Oh, what is this? The parliamentarian. Oh, what's this? Pink. What was it like recently? Like pink slips or like this, that, and the other, or we can't, they're going to find a reason they can't do it. And I think this book, like, if nothing else, really does shed light on that fact. And then, like, I read some of the reviews of this book, and it blows my mind. Like, the June 5th, 2018, the New York Times, quote, Bill Clinton and James Patterson have written a thriller. It's good. And they give it 4 stars. Like, and they're like talking about how like the characters are deep and the politics are real and it's tough but fair and has nuanced perspective on everything. And like there's a lot like of these like puff pieces and like from the like sort of main media outlets.
Again, appeals to nuance that are downright evil if you have even a shred of sympathy for somebody who lives outside of the imperial core.
I guess I'm like at a loss for a real like bow to tie it up with, but like this this like did a real number on me. Like, man. But like, yeah. If nothing else, if you need, like, if there is something in your, I'll tell you this, the only time I'd ever tell someone to read the book, if there's anything, any ounce of you in your brain that believes meaningful change can happen through the Democratic Party, I would implore you to read The President Is Missing. That's aside from that, this book is should be just obliterated from the annals of history.
Yeah, just you know, all change comes from the top, from the adults in the room, you know, and it's just, you know, even in the fantasy, you know, it's the most vapid nonsense you can possibly imagine.
It's like ChatGPT made it a crossed over an episode of 24 in the West Wing. It lacks any, it feels like it lacks any human input except for like a few places where it just, the human input is like anxiety about one's status or insecurity, or occasionally when a woman shows up, just like horniness. And aside from that, it feels just like AI generated crap, like just trying to recycle old tropes and shove together just like a political narrative that is, again, not even internally consistent. And good God, if you just are like, oh, who wrote this? Bill Clinton? Guess I'll give this guy a Google. Like, come the, oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, dear listener, if you enjoy the book, I cannot take that away from you. I don't want to take that away from you.
I'll come for you. No, I'm just kidding.
It's not my decision to make, but I can't enjoy it. I can't. It's a fantasy about a real person at the head of a real institution whose decisions affect millions of people, billions even, each day. And that's what you know going into it, right? And if you want to make believe that the most powerful person in the world wants what's best for the greatest number of people, the question that I imagine would inevitably cross your mind once you close this book is, well, why doesn't he actually? Why is this fiction? And the next question is, well, which class of people does he really serve, right? Owners or workers? Because for a great many people, the answers to those questions shape their physical quality of life, you know, where it doesn't destroy it entirely.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, even this book lets it slip. Where's he going to stay? The venture capitalist mansion, you know, who's he buddied up with? And maybe he came from nothing, but where did he need to go? Oh, he needed to go to all these like nice law schools. He needed to go through this hoop and that hoop. At the end of the day, that really says it all. And I do think that this was, I do actually think, you know, coming through the other side of this, that this was a worthwhile investigation into this. I am greatly discouraged from reading any James Patterson in the future. Certainly discouraged from, I probably can't get worse than this, but he does actually have a book with Hillary Clinton, so maybe it can.
It's not James Patterson.
Oh, it's not
the Hillary Clinton collab. No, it's somebody else.
I thought it was James Patterson.
Let me see. Hillary Clinton bibliography.
State of Terror, right? Oh, Louise
State,
Penny.
Yes. State of...
Was it Louise Penny?
Louise Penny.
That she wrote it with?
What else has she written? I mean, that's getting into another episode of the
State. Yeah, it does. That could be on there. Honestly, I'd rather talk about Rodham. If we were going to talk about Hillary Clinton, you know, the novel Rodham?
Rodham. I'm not familiar.
It's a book about if she had never married Bill Clinton, what her life would be like.
Really?
Yes. It's it was really well reviewed. I have no idea if it's any good. I don't even know, like, I don't really even know. Like, it's like basically Hillary takes a different road and she like blazes her own trail, basically. I don't know where it goes. I haven't read it. I don't know anything about it outside of that. But if we were going to do a Hillary Clinton book, I think that would actually be a more interesting one.
It sounds, I mean, the premise sounds innocuous, but like,
it's, oh, I'm sure it's like either like, I'm sure it's deeply evil. Like, I have no doubt.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It sounds like the sort of thing that could spin off into something remarkably deranged.
No offense to Curtis Sittenfeld, the writer. I actually have no idea. It might be fine. I am seeing that, like, I don't know, the New York Times and Good Morning America called it ingenious, and that makes me think it's not going to have good politics. The Washington Post called it the best book of the year. So, like, I'm thinking it's going to be evil. But yeah, no, you can just, guys, listeners, you can see us in real time, like, you know, sowing the seeds of our own misery. So, like, don't feel bad for me when I complain about reading these books. You hear me live planting my own, planting these rakes that I will step on and get hit in the face by, much like Sideshow Bob.
All I can say is Rodham, I barely know him.
That honestly, that is a better joke than anything in this book. Folks, thank you for listening. As always, if you are if you're enjoying it, you know, let somebody know. Shoot us an email. I'm like very inactive on Twitter, but you know, follow us at Socialist Shelf. Shoot us an email at Socialist at socialistshelf@gmail.com. We'd appreciate hearing from you. You know, tell us what book to listen to next. Maybe you can recommend something good, you know, that would be awesome. Really appreciate you. And I'm trying to think of a good sign off for this. Do you have anything, Joss? The last episode was so easy with So It Goes, and the Vonnegut.
I'll end with an anecdote of mine.
Do it.
I was 5 or 6 years old and living in the Netherlands around the turn of the century. This was right before the election was stolen in 2000, of course. And the school that I went to, Bill Clinton visited, and he brought his jazz band with him, the Three Blind Mice. And they played, you know, my family was on the welcoming committee. We held the door. He signed a thing for us. It's it's the household that I grew up in. His signature is sitting around in a scrapbook somewhere. And do I wish for like the innocence of those days when 6-year-old me thought Clinton was just the coolest? I don't. I really don't. But, you know, it's books like these that send my mind back to these days and make me to those days and make me wonder.
Just the scene from Ratatouille where he takes the bite and like zooms back to his childhood. That's you just reading the president. All right. Thank you, folks, for reading or listening. Don't read this book. Bye.
He's out.